Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. On today's episode, episode 198.
198.
Two away from 200. Wow. It's a big milestone for us.
Yeah, no kidding.
We have the lovely Dustin Gaines, who is a great partner to a lot of churches out there, specifically when it comes to the legal department. That's still a big thing for churches.
Yeah.
That often maybe is forgotten or swept under the table, but it's still a vital part of our ministries. Dustin, thanks for being on our podcast today.
Hey, I'm glad to be here today.
All right. Now, before we get too much into the content, I got to tell you, Drew, I'm pretty excited because now it being the end of June, we are ramped and ready to go. I mean, we've only got July and then August, and there we are in the middle of September for what? Well, Idea Night 2023. And if you've not yet registered for Idea Night 2023, go ahead and go online and do so. 50 locations all over the country, and definitely there's going to be one near you. If you have an Idea Night near you, can I encourage you to treat it differently than an Idea Day? Well, you know, if you came to the Idea Summit, can I encourage you to treat it differently than the Idea Summit? That's right. For those of you who really know the network, you understand that the Idea Summit is our national event that takes place every 2 years. And the Idea Days are regional events that take place all over the country. And we've got four of them coming up next year. But Idea Night is different. Where Idea Summit is national and Idea Day is regional, Idea Night is local, which means within a two-hour drive of your front door is an Idea Night where you can get to know other ministry leaders in your local context. And it's not just you getting to know them, it's you bringing local pastors in. Here's our heart about Idea Night. You've got a pastor that probably lives within a 10-mile radius of you, and he's lonely. He's alone. He doesn't have anybody. And he needs a friend. Would you think about inviting him? Maybe two or three. Maybe just spend 5 minutes on your knees before God and ask the Lord, Lord, who is it within my community that I should reach out to that's shepherding, that's pastoring, that's leading a ministry that I can bring to Idea Night? So it's not just about you going to Idea Night for a few ideas. It's about going out to Idea Night and including pastors and ministry leaders that could be potential friends for the future and then developing community from that Idea Night that might take place monthly or quarterly within your own schedule. So Idea Night 2023, go online and register today. But today we are joined with a friend that we've known for many years, a good friend of the network and a friend that I knew way back in our college days at Pensacola Christian College, way back at the end of the 20th century. Can you believe that, Dustin? It's been a long time.
Getting old.
Yeah, we are, and we can see it on the Zoom call that we're on right now. Buddy, how you doing, and how is the ministry? Can you introduce you and the ministry to our audience for those who don't know you that well?
Yeah, thank you, Josh, and it's an honor to be able to be here today. And again, my name is Dustin Gaines. Been married to my wife, Shannon, for we just celebrated our 20th anniversary, and we have one kiddo. We live in Dallas, Texas. And we recently were able to launch Gaines Goodspeed Juba PC, known trade name is My Church Law Firm. And you can go and find our new law firm at mychurchlawfirm.com. And we're a full service law firm. We have over 50 years of legal experience with our attorneys. And we specialize in churches, private religious schools, and religious nonprofits. And we're just excited. I oversee all of our litigation, crisis management, and major investigations department of our law firm, and we're standing with pastors as they go through their darkest times and able to be a help and a support to them as we litigate the case, as we send the proper messaging about what's going on with the crisis, and then just to be a friend and to be there to be able to be a prayer support and to help in any way we can. And it's our honor to be able to do that here at the firm. Other guys, they specialize in more of the transactional areas, governance, real estate. I think we might talk about some compensation studies a little bit later on about some of those things as well. But we're here for the church. We're glad to be a resource and so thankful for the network. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, we're excited about having you. Mychurchlawfirm.com is where you want to be. And Dustin's law firm is our law firm, full disclosure, here at Southern Hills in Las Vegas. And we love him. We're thankful for his ministry to the broader church and to our local church here in Las Vegas. And we want to encourage you to go check out his stuff. But today, I want to talk about what you're seeing in the world of church law right now. What are you seeing as some of the major cases that are coming to the forefront? What should pastors be aware of? Some guy out in Indiana right now, he's pastoring a church of 250 people. He's focused upon ministering to these people, making disciples, preaching his next sermon from the book of Galatians. And then all of a sudden, law comes into all of this. What does he need to be aware of? What's on the forefront for him?
Traditionally, the biggest lawsuit that churches have had to deal with has been abuse cases, child abuse cases. And when you look at, you know, the statistics each year and you see what has been the number one lawsuit and how has it come up, in our practice, hands down, far and away, and even at a greater volume than those cases, and insurance companies generally will deal with the child abuse cases. That's not something that we're able to really do all that much. But we focus on, and what has been the number one case actually has been labor and employment cases. And it's been this way since about the beginning of 2020. COVID kind of spiked it up a little bit, but probably wondering, well, what is a labor and employment case? So somebody is wrongfully terminated. That's what they'll say. I was fired from my job and I was fired for an illegal purpose. And illegal purposes would be I was discriminated against on the basis of my sex or on the basis of my disability or my age, any of those protected classes. So discrimination, retaliation comes up. We'll talk about what that is here in a little bit. That's the number one claim that comes up and is in these lawsuits, or harassment. Those come up as well. And really, I mean, I'm getting about one a week at this point. I mean, one brand new lawsuit every single week where a church is sued because they fired somebody or somebody quit on their own. And they said that they only quit because it was such a hostile work environment that they couldn't be there anymore. And they find themselves in the litigation process.
Mm. So, okay, as a local church pastor, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to have this issue. I'm not going to have a problem. I mean, these are all my friends, right? I'm Michael Scott, and this is all my family, and we're all pals in this location. But in the reality, you have to live in that on that line that kind of says, well, this is a potential issue. This is a potential problem, and it could touch you. Why should we care about labor and employment cases in a church context?
Yeah, and it's really important to just understand when you mix religion and you mix somebody's spiritual well-being and their church, and then they have hurt feelings that go along with it. I remember when I was in law school all the time, I would hear people say, I never want to be a family law lawyer. I don't want to work with people going through, you know, divorces and custody fights. And the reason why is there's such emotions in those particular cases because, you know, people, they're hurt. I mean, the love of their life at one time completely abandoned them. I mean, their relationship is broken. Their kids are at risk now. I remember my first ever hearing, I saw a client come out of the courtroom and she like hauled back and she slapped her lawyer out in the hall. And it was just, you know, the emotions were so intense, and they are so intense in the family law context. Well, same in the church context. If you have a church split, if you have a board fight, all of those will wind their way a lot of times into the courtroom. And it's sad for the cause of Christ, but it's the same thing in the labor and employment world. You have somebody that worked at church. They had a great relationship with the staff, with the executive leadership team. And then something fell apart where they lost their job, they quit, and now they're mad about it. And they're animated, and all of those emotions are coming out because of that religious aspect of it, because of the shame that now comes, because the reputation's at risk. But when you think about it from a church standpoint, I mean, everybody should care about it. I mean, our reputation in ministry is everything. I mean, it's a really important thing. And if you're known as the place where you're discriminating and harassing and doing all of those things, I mean, nobody wants that reputation as a ministry leader. Ecclesiastes 10:1, it talks about how dead flies make the perfumer's ointment to send forth a stinking smell. Something that has one job, it's supposed to smell good. When dead flies get in there, I mean, just little things, I mean, it ruins the whole thing. And people are even more frustrated because when something has only one job that it's supposed to do really well and it doesn't, there's a different expectation that you have for those things. So when you look at the ministry in particular, nobody wants to look at a church and say, oh boy, that's the place where they turn through staff left and right because they don't take care of them or they're mean to them or they don't get along, any of those things. So really important for reputation, and they're really expensive as well. Most lawsuits that church faces, that churches will face, will have insurance that'll cover it. On the labor and employment side, you can purchase, it's called Employment Protection Liability Insurance, EPLI. Well, EPLI is really expensive on an annual basis. A lot of our clients will report that it's between $15,000 and $20,000 a year just for the premium on that. And then you have to, they call the deductible, not a deductible, which is frustrating. They call it a retention. The retention amounts, you're going to have to pay the first $20,000 to $30,000 out of your own pockets just to defend the case. So you're looking at, you know, having to pay a lot of money just to get through the defense. So it's expensive. It's in federal court. It's very public. And then that reputational aspect, I mean, it's huge. And a lot of people have learned that it's a good way to try and make trouble for church. And we have some very practical tips that can take that really high risk area and take it down to almost nothing. And again, this wasn't even on my radar until all of these cases started happening, to the tune of, you know, about one a week right now.
Well, practical tips. You're talking about practical tips to keep us from there. Sure. I mean, if I'm in the midst of that, I need to go to somebody like you and say, okay, what do we do now? I didn't have the insurance. I'm not paying the premiums. Now I'm in this mess. Well, what are the practical tips to keep us from getting into this mess?
Well, first, I would say have a good and solid understanding of just normal biblical conflict resolution as a staff team. Matthew 18, you know, Jesus, he says that if you have a conflict with somebody, you go and you talk to them alone and you try to work it out. You try to resolve it. So if you're a youth pastor on staff and you have conflict with one of your supervisors, the senior pastor, somebody else that's there, it's on you. You go and you talk to them and you be able to work that out and try to resolve the conflict. If that doesn't work, you can take a couple of more with you. And you just keep opening that circle up to bring the people in to try and resolve the conflict. So just normal biblical conflict resolution. I mean, when you think of any conflict in life, I mean, the scripture has a lot to say about what it robs you of. I mean, why in the Beatitudes did Jesus say, you know, blessed are the peacemakers? You know, you will have blessing if you are a peacemaker. Well, a peacemaker is not going to live with known conflict, you know, and that blessing, it's that inward joy that cannot be affected by circumstances. It is that unchanging, it's not happenstance, it's not something fortuitous, but it's that inward joy that I have. In 1 John chapter 4, you know, it talks about if we say we love somebody and then we have our actions show that we hate them, says that we're a liar. And how can we love God who we haven't seen when we can't even properly love the people that are in front of us? And even in marriage, I mean, think of, you know, in 1 Peter 3, you know, husbands dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. And then it goes on at the end and it's indicting, says that your prayers be not hindered. I mean, man, as a husband, as a man, how important it is to live in that harmony and that relationship. John MacArthur said there's no more serious threat that can be given to a believer than that the interruption of all the promises of prayers heard and unanswered. That is a severe cutting off of the divine blessing, which shows how critical is the loving harmony between spouses. So just have that at the highest level. Conflict resolution, it takes a lot of humility. I mean, read Matthew 5, and I get to preach out from time to time, and we go through Matthew 5 very carefully, and we talk about biblical conflict resolution, but have the humility. You take the initiative if you know there's conflict. I mean, Jesus said, leave your gift at the altar, and you go and you make it right with that person, so it's on you to do it. It takes humility. Ministry leaders can be some of the most stubborn with this. I talked to a guy at the end of 2022, beginning of 2023, and we've talked on the phone 3 or 4 times a week just because of a board dispute. And we've walked through these verses. And I said, it's a pastor. I said, your most important relationship is that with your board right now. That's the most important thing that you can cultivate. I'm not going to do it. They disrespected me. I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to talk to them. He got fired last week. I got the phone call because he wouldn't go and have the humility to apologize. He just would say, It's not in my personality. I mean, you think of all the moving parts in your car. I mean, how hot your engine is. I mean, the oil in the engine, it alleviates all of that friction that's there. And that's what humility is in these situations. So have the humility as a leader to simply walk through and have a proper perspective of how to resolve the conflict that's there. So I'd say first, conflict resolution. I mean, it should just be very natural as a ministry leader. I'm going to biblically walk through, handle these things when they're small, and work through that conflict.
So humility is the oil that keeps the engine running through conflict. That's a really great point, Dustin. I think about so many times in life when you go into a conflict resolution conversation, and as the leader, you kind of have this, like we're not often dictators in life, but when you go into some of those conversations and you have the like authority over them, you almost go into it as a dictator saying like, this is what's going to happen. And that's can't be further from the opposite of that humility you talk about. So what a great point. I don't want to miss that.
Yeah. And look at Matthew 5. I mean, Jesus says, you know, you don't go in and you don't say, you know, Raca, it says in the King James, you know, you fool. You don't go in name calling. You don't go in upset. You know, I mean, you go in with humility. I mean, in marriage and anything, my wife and I are able, we work in marriage ministry at our church, and you can get stuck in this crazy cycle. Everybody's fighting. We don't know how to get out of it, you know? Well, humility is what will be the off-ramp to that. And it'll help you work through and get through that the right way. So once you have a biblical understanding of conflict resolution, then move into the legal pieces. And the legal pieces are really important to think through. So on the labor and employment side, a person has to file a charge first with the EEOC. That's the government agency that oversees these things. So on the legal side, you're very protected as a church, but it's going to take a little bit of time before your protection can be and your defenses can be asserted. So somebody files their EEOC charge, it's probably going to take about 6 months for that to be heard. The church has to file with the EEOC what's called a position statement. So it's going to cost money. You're going to have to find a lawyer. You're going to have to draft a position statement. It's a legal filing that goes to a federal government employee who's going to only look at it, and they're going to say, we're going to issue what's called a right to sue letter. So then the employee, they think now they're bold. I mean, you think through all the billboards in town, they look up and we all look up and we see all the lawyer billboards. I would say probably 95% of secular lawyers have no idea of the law as it pertains to the church world in the labor and employment space. So they're going to find a lawyer that'll take their case on a contingency fee. It's not going to cost them anything. And that lawyer is going to go and they're going to sue the church. They're going to file their charge, and then the lawsuit's going to come out. And at that point, you have to then try to defend the case. And you're going to do that in a couple of different ways. You're going to argue jurisdiction. This court does not have jurisdiction to hear this case because, and I'll explain that in a minute, or you're going to argue the merits. And the merits are, no, we didn't discriminate, we didn't retaliate, we didn't harass, and you're going to look at the merits. Most frustrating thing with these, jurisdiction is really important in these cases because the First Amendment, from a 2012 U.S. Supreme Court case and a 2020 U.S. Supreme Court case, says that a court as an arm of the government cannot interfere in a church's right to hire and fire people that perform ministerial function. So it's a critical, ministerial function is a critical term in definition to understand. It doesn't mean licensed. It doesn't mean ordained. It doesn't mean that you're the full-time pastor up preaching. It just means that that person functions as a minister. So from a practical standpoint, what does it mean to function as a minister? Well, what do we do in the cases when we have the director of accounting that files a lawsuit and they're not up on the platform, they're not preaching, they're not leading music, they're not praying with people, they're not counseling all the time, but they're processing the money and they're overseeing the staff in that particular area, or the graphic designer, or the guy that runs the lights, or the security guard? And one of the things that I've noticed on these cases is when it comes time to defend a church, you know, church employees should do churchy things. They should be involved. I mean, people can go to work anywhere, but if you've made the decision, you feel like God has called me to work for my church or a church, I've got to be willing to be involved in ministry in some way, shape, or form. So what we tell churches is make sure your HR documents are absolutely replete with ministerial function for every employee, but don't lie about it. Make sure that it's real. It's very frustrating. Sometimes churches will hire an HR professional from the outside, and you'll look at all the documents and it doesn't look like a church. It doesn't read like a church. There's no scriptural citation. It doesn't say what that person's going to be doing ministerially in the church. So even if you have the director of accounting, you can say, hey, director of accounting, you oversee a team. Why don't you pray with them once a week? Why don't you every 2 weeks do a devotion? And you're being paid for that. Now we have ministerial function with you. So challenge everybody, be very creative with those employees that are in the gray area and find ministerial function. Now, what won't work with that is saying, hey, you work at a church, everybody should be here. You're going to work as the director of accounting or a graphic designer for 40 hours a week. And you need to volunteer in the nursery on Sundays, or you need to volunteer in children's church. When it comes to the volunteer side of it, that's not part of their job because you're telling them that they have to volunteer for something. So what we say is you pay them for 38 hours a week to be the director of accounting, and then 2 hours a week, they're paid to be the fourth grade Sunday school teacher. And they're being paid now as a part of their job to perform as a minister. Now, what that does is it will give you several hopeful off-ramps. I mentioned before, plaintiff's lawyers don't know about this. It's called the ministerial exception. They don't know about it. So they're very shocked. I mean, I was defending Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in a case 5 years ago, and I'm deposing the plaintiff, and we're 4 or 5 hours in, and I've spent 3 hours almost asking the plaintiff about ministerial function, and the lawyers on the other side look up and they say, why are you asking all of these questions? And they just don't know. And it completely cuts the case off and gets it thrown out of court. So it's really important, you know, when you think through, you know, all of these things, because the lawyer's not going to know. It goes through the EEOC, takes about 6 months. They file their lawsuit. You file a motion to dismiss. It's called a Rule 12B motion. And you're in court and you're arguing, Mr. Graphic Designer also performed ministerial functions. Or one of my favorites was a volunteer coordinator. And right there, I mean, in open court, I mean, you're telling the judge, Bible says that we are a kingdom of priests. God's taken the work of the ministry and he's put it into the hand of every believer. That's what this church believes. And that's what her job was. Her job was to coordinate those things. And, you know, judge, yeah, man, case dismissed, you know, and throws them out. So just make everybody do some sort of ministerial function and then reflect it in the documents, job descriptions, employee handbook. Performance evaluations are critical. It's my favorite evidence because you can show that this is what they were expected to do, and they were evaluated on their ministerial component of their job. And you're going to be able to get that case resolved if at the end of the show, I can provide my email address, and I have a whole resource that we've put together on this that can help churches. And it has all the practical steps, explanation of the law, anatomy of a labor case, just because they're so big right now. And we'd be glad to get that kicked out. But most important thing is just make sure all of the documents reflect that ministerial function. And when you're on that litigation path, it's the easiest off-ramp, the fastest, the most affordable, and less stress as well.
I have a comment and a follow-up question on something you said. So the comment is, I hope our listeners didn't miss this, but documentation is incredibly important. So I know we don't typically have HR departments at a church, but anytime you're going to a performance conversation, extremely good or extremely bad, there should be some kind of documentation process for it in the rare case that this actually does have a legal matter to it. But the question I have is, like, this is just for my own curiosity, Dustin, but like, how does, if a church is operating in a state that has an at-will employment, clause, how does that play into the church, or does it?
No, that's a great question. And I probably get that question once a week. So really, really smart question. So most states nowadays are at will, which means that you can hire and fire really at your own will without permission, unless there's an employment contract with somebody that takes you out of the at will space. But what at will never means, it never means that you can discriminate and retaliate and have that be the motivating factor behind your at will. So discrimination, any of the protected classes. So you can't say you're fired because you're old, you're fired because you have cancer, you're fired because you can't walk up the steps or you can't see your monitor. any of those things. And then retaliation is the big one too. Retaliation is that I'm adversely punishing an employee for something that they did that the law says is protected. And things that the law says is protected, the 30-second version of it, reporting sexual harassment, talking about wage and hour. I mean, somebody comes into your office, had this case, security guard comes into executive pastor's office and says, hey, I'm paid salary, but I really should be paid hourly. And if I was paid hourly, I'd be subject to all the overtime that's out there. And you can't just pick people to pay salary. You know, there's requirements. It's called the Fair Labor Standards Act, and you have to classify employees in the proper way. And they said, you know, this guy's a pain to be here. I mean, who does this guy think he is? I mean, he's coming in and he's asking us questions, telling us how we need to classify him. Get out of here. You're fired. So they fired him 2 days later, cited the reason for the fact that he was difficult to work with and get along with. So he filed, number one claim was retaliation. It's protected activity to talk about those things. And now you're in this situation where you have to defend it in a case. So, you know, when you think of it, if it's discrimination, if it's retaliation, it's then not filing or not terminating anybody for any of the other permissible reasons. So, I mean, if you just don't like them, they do a bad job, they're not a good fit, you can terminate for those things. They just can't be any of those protected discrimination, retaliation things.
And so they're coming in attempting to prove the point that this is a discrimination based upon a protected classification or a retaliation for something that I've done. So that's the case they have to prove. But one of the best ways to avoid that are some of the tips that you're already sharing. What else should we know about these practical tips to make sure our church is protected?
Documentation, like Andrew mentioned, is absolutely critical. Make sure you have a good review process. Make sure it's documented in every which way that employees are performing some sort of a ministerial function. And a lot of our clients, a lot of our larger clients, even clients that have tens of thousands of attenders on each weekend, they'll just go ahead and they'll say, you know what? And I love this. They say, we're a church. Church is in the people business. So it doesn't matter if you're the light guy, the security guard, the graphic designer, if you draw a paycheck from the church, part of your job is to minister to people. So everybody's job description says, while working here, you've got to pick from one of these things, and you're either going to be a small group leader, you're going to work in children's church, and it's not just, you know, sitting in the back and, you know, making, but you're involved with people. And it's been pretty awesome. I mean, churches, pastors, I mean, are very creative to take people of all personality types, and you can place them in a spot where they have ministerial functions. So they don't have to be up talking. I mean, if you're more introverted people, that's never going to work, but you can have them assist and you can have them help and provide care ministry. And everything's documented to reflect it. Job descriptions, performance evaluations, the handbook. It's just full that shows not just light guy, but this is the person that is also entrusted with teaching the word of God on Sundays to four-year-olds. And that's why we hired him, is because that's part of his job here. The court will get rid of that at the earliest possible phase when we're able to prove that type of thing. And those documents are the best way to be able to do it.
You know, I hate to transition, but for sake of time, I've got to ask about ministerial compensation. One of the things that we get questions about here as leaders in the network quite often is, how exactly do I determine what salary should be? I'm a pastor. I'm hiring a new youth pastor. What do I pay this guy, Josh? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, give him an apartment and some peanut butter. I don't. Well, how does he determine that? Or if I'm a pastor and my board is saying to me, you know, how do I determine your salary? And what is the pastor supposed to say? I'm worth double honor. Like, how exactly is a pastor supposed to figure out how to pay his team? How should a board member or a deacon listen into this, find out about ministerial compensation? I remember back when we started 20 years ago, there were like big, thick phone books, and you could order these books and look it up based on different categories. But now we're in a different age. How do we determine this ministerial compensation?
It's a really important consideration. So when you think of a staff team that's there, you know, I mean, fair compensation, and churches are all over the place on this. I mean, it used to be back in the day when, you know, pastors were expected to live very, you know, very thin, very meager. And, you know, you then can go to the other extreme where you see these guys that have their jets and, you know, all of the different things that are going on out there. But one of the very best ways is to start from the top, to have a very trusted group of your board. And you can't make any guarantees, but just about every time we've gone through this process at the firm, and one of our lawyers, this is primarily what he does, is on the transactional side. He facilitates and works with this. And just about every time, everybody's eyes are completely opened to, wow, okay, this is what we're paying the staff, and this is what we can and should be paying the staff. So how did they get that understanding of what we can and should be after looking at what it is? Well, one of the things that we're able to do is they're called independent compensation studies, and that's done for a group of your board. So find a trusted group in your board, and they're the independent compensation committee. They need to be independent, no family members, no other staff members. It's a group of trusted people, and their job as a committee is to be able to figure out what's fair. Well, think of it when you go buy a house. How do you tell what's fair when you're in the real estate market? Well, your realtor will pull comparables, right? They're going to look at, here's the house of your square footage on your acreage with these amenities. This is what it sold for 2 months ago. And because of this and all the other ones in the book, we're going to say this is what would be fair from yours right now, or a fair price. And you're able to assess it based upon the market comparables. So what a comp study does is, there are organizations that are out there. All they do is they look at ministries. They look at the size. They look at the revenue. They look at the debt. They look at the bills. They look at everything. And they're going to come back from their accounting backgrounds. As lawyers, we don't even pretend to have accounting backgrounds. It's why we lean into the accountants on this one. And from the comp study folks, they're going to provide, here's what the 15th percentile based upon your side, your size of your church, your income, your experience, all of those things. And then they're going to go up to the 75th, and they're going to have numbers assigned to that. So if you're a church that runs 500 people and you have, you know, revenue of, you know, $1.5 million a year, and you have a mortgage payment at $30,000 a month, I mean, they're going to factor all of that in, and they're going to say, here's what the 15th percent in your same situation, the bottom 15th and the 75th, that's going to come to your committee now. And they're going to have all the data, and they're going to be able to pray through that. They're going to be able to look at what your economic realities are as a church. And then they're going to say, all right, we can afford to pay senior pastor this. And it really then after that just depends on what your governance style is. So you might want that group to set salaries for everybody on the ministerial team, on the pastoral team, or you might want them to set the senior pastors, and then senior or executive leadership teams, they can go ahead and they can set the staff salaries for everybody moving down. But it's a good, clean process. I mean, you're able to, good information out there is really helpful. And that's really what the function is it's put into a nice report, and it gives you all that information that you need.
Dustin, it's incredibly helpful. I'm wondering if somebody's listening to this podcast and they'd like to contact you and your firm to talk more about compensation and how to set this up, would they be able to do so? Do you help churches and pastors with these questions about compensation committees?
Absolutely. And we help with any area of the law. I mean, we have all of our lawyers. I mean, we're very complementary. I mean, just like doctors have different practice areas, you've got your cardiologists. It's the same thing here. We cover every aspect. If you're sued, if you are involved in attorney general investigation, if you just need to redo your bylaws, buy land, debt compensation, any of that. If you go to our website at mychurchlawfirm.com, or if you just email me, be easier way, at dustin@mychurchlawfirm.com. We have a program, and we're able to go through, and we take a year. We look at all of your critical areas in your church. On the program, you'll get a portal, all sorts of resources. We have a monthly resource. We have quarterly webinars. As a member, you're going to get access to all of that stuff. And we try to be very proactive. It's a lot cheaper, less expensive, and less stressful to steer around all the landmines and puddles that are there than to have to call for help and get pulled out of those things. It takes way longer. It's way more stressful. So email me, log on to the website. We'd be glad to tell you what we can do to help. And like I said before, we're here. We believe the hope of the world is through the church. It's not through a court decision. It's not through laws that can be passed. And we feel called by God to be able to support you guys as pastors doing what you're doing so that you can reach the world with as less stress as possible. That's why we're here.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Dustin. And I genuinely say this, it's so awesome to see what God has done in your life and how he has gifted you to bless the kingdom of God through local church ministry. And I'm just standing in amazement as you speak on these subjects, because I know you've been a help to our church. I know you're a help to a lot of other friends of ours in the network. And I'm thankful for what you spoke into this meeting today, this podcast today. But I'm really thankful for what your gifts are doing for local church ministry and the kingdom of God broadly. So, Dustin, again, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.